Well, folks, once again, it's my great pleasure to be in the studio here with Dan Renshaw. Welcome, Dan.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for having me here.
Last session, we took a simple question, the name of a well-recognized road in the Hatcher Pass area, Archangel Road, and explored how it came to be that that name was applied. But before that, the session before, we had been talking about and had begun the discussion about all the stuff that comes out of the ground.
Yes, but we were struggling. I wanted to talk about the milling part. The mining part, everybody's familiar with that. But once you get the ore up out of the hole in the ground, what do you do with it? Now, two sessions ago, we started on that, but we struggled to get the ore up out of the ground. I was explaining all of the everything necessary to go through, especially with a winds development like at the Independence. Excuse me. Then we got further off track here with that simple little question where we speculated about the Archangel Road. And Mike, let's go back there to that discussion of last time of the Archangel Road and its Russian connection. We got off on that track a little bit because the major mine in that particular area was known as the Mabel Mine. And I had mentioned to you that the people who discovered the Mabel Mine were actually the rediscoverers, in as much as they said somebody had been there before them and been digging on the vein. And it was very old. And the reputation, they found artifacts laying around over the years that were Russian. And so this is what got us off on the Archangel Road, et cetera. And what I'd like to ask right now of you is a little sidebar kind of a thing that the audience may find interesting, having to do with the Mabel Mine. When World War II came visiting, there were probably 1,000 people in the Willow Creek Mining District. Workers, families, especially seasonal summer months, there were a lot of prospectors. There was a lot of activity, say 1940.
Right.
1941, things were still good, but they became more difficult because there was competition for the miners to move to Anchorage and take part in the construction of Fort Richardson, being paid a heck of a lot more by doing so. So things were winding down without anybody knowing it, what was going on. when the war came, all of those people went who knows where, everybody to a different location. And after the war, many, in fact, most never came back. We have no idea where they could have gone to. My father now came into the district in the late 30s, and he got attached to the gold cord mine and started rebuilding it up with a new mining camp. And he got everything in place and was doing wonderfully well when the war hit, which just knocked the legs out from underneath the effort. He had a mining engineer employed while he was getting the mine up and running, by the name of Howard Behrens. After the war, Howard was asked by a group of investors in Seattle that owned the Mabel Mine if he would reopen the Mabel Mine for them. A very capable individual, both scholastically and also the practical miner end of it. Excellent miner. So he gave it a try. And my father was and Howard were very good friends. And I remember one trip, this is after the war now, probably 46, maybe 45, the summer. I'm like, you know, 6, maybe 7 years old with my father at the Mabel Mine, there to visit with Howard Behrens. As we pulled into the driveway of the mine off the Archangel Road, Howard came walking rapidly toward us and motioning us to hurry. We got out of the truck, And he was also motioning us with a finger in front of his lips, you know, be quiet. And he pointed up the mountain. So we sat there, and Mike, I'm going to falter with the words adequate to describe what happened next.
Okay.
Howard had an extraordinary man working for him who loved to sing. And the man sang all the time. And he had had some training in opera. And he had a powerful voice. And he would time his aria coming out from underground so that when he got his waste car to the dump,
right,
he could finish it. Thousand feet up the mountainside, and we're down below, and we can hear every word, and it is just fabulous to listen to this.
Wow.
It was like the most enormous, wonderful opera house ever. The whole valley was filled with this. It was phenomenal. And then, upon finishing the aria, he would dump the waste car, and all of the debris going down the mountain sounded like applause.
Oh,
it was
fascinating.
You know, a memory from a seven-year-old.
Okay.
It was
powerful, though.
It was powerful. It was powerful. Yeah. And I, to this day, I cannot tell you what he's saying, but I do have a kind of a hint in my heart that it was probably the Nessun Dorma from Puccini.
Okay.
Mike, is there any chance could we play that right now?
We can do that, Dan, and I will play the latter part of Nessun Dorma from Puccini. Here we go.
Ed il mio bacio scioglierò il silenzio che ti fa mia. All'alba vincerò, vincerò, vincerò.
Wow. Okay, Dan, tell us more.
What can I say? Can you make an opera fan out of a seven-year-old? I think you can. And that from that point on.
Provided you have that kind of opera house, which is the entire bowl area up there with the mountains around, probably the place where opera, although it rarely is sung that way, is best appreciated.
Oh, very much so, yeah, and the surprise of it all. Anyway, just a little sidebar, a little personal thing.
Okay. So now back to our major purpose here to hang on to all that stuff coming out and talk about the milling.
The milling. Every one of the mines in the Willow Creek Mining District had to have a mill. You had to crush and grind and get the ore reduced down to, and we've mentioned the word before, you're looking for a liberation point where the little tiny particles of gold are free. Once they're free, you've got a chance to recover them. The recovery in the early days of the Willow Creek Mining District, meaning before World War I, was all related to mercury. The district, for the most part, was what was called free milling. A word intended to indicate that it would indeed plate. We mentioned now two sessions ago plating.
Mm-hmm.
A big plate of copper electrolytically coated with silver with a veneer of mercury on it, and the material that had been crushed and ground as a slurry would pour over that in a laminar fashion, gold being so much heavier. And actually, Mike, gold is so much heavier than the quartz, roughly 19 on the scale versus 2.65 for quartz. And then when you put both of those in water, it magnifies that difference. So the gold particles, even though really small, would quickly settle to the mercury, and the mercury would catch the gold. You hoped so. And you did plating tests to make sure that you could. If you couldn't get the gold to plate, you're in trouble. You couldn't do the mining. It would be a wasted effort.
Okay.
You'd have to bring other equipment in. And in the early days, you couldn't do that.
Okay.
So anyway, we struggled two sessions ago with getting the ore up out of the underground. I'd mentioned that, for example, the Independence was a winds development. From the 900 level, they went down the vein to several hundred feet of depth. And at every 100 feet down the dip of the vein, they'd put in a level drift in the vein and then mine uphill from that. And the ore then had to circuitous path to get up out of the underground and be delivered at the Independence, for example. It had to be delivered to a tram station, where then the ore would be put in a bucket that would go down an aerial tram line and finally report to the mill.
So just a quick question. I promise this will not take us far. But I look at that area now, and I think about the line running down, and I'm thinking, did they ever break?
Never heard of a cable breaking. There's some interesting stories told about splicing cables to begin with. It's a real art, I'll tell you. These long, long splices where you'd have to lay the pieces in with the others and tuck it underneath and so on, so that the wheels that are riding on the static cable don't unconnect the whole thing.
Okay, well, let's go back.
But I never heard of one breaking. For the most part, the cables were way over capable of the weights that were put on them. These ore cars were not large, probably carrying 500, 600 pounds of ore. So, you know, not a big load.
Okay.
One of the ways you can make a cable work better for you is to have a lot of slack in it, called catenary, so that it's not stressed so much. And it's kind of, when you're engineering a cable on a mountainside, low end at the mill, high end up at the portal, you will stretch it to the point where you're not going to want to drag the bucket in the ground at the halfway point.
Sure.
You want to have lots of catenary.
Okay.
But the ore would come down and report to the mill and into the coarse ore bin. There was a grizzly that would not allow large rocks to go beyond.
Okay, once again, let me pause a moment. Grizzly, I know that's not what we usually think of as a large bear standing there saying, we will not allow.
Yes, in this case, the term got applied to a very coarse screen. In this case, probably made out of either rail or pipe, and allowing pieces to pass that were, nominal 3-inch.
Okay.
If that wouldn't pass, then there was a man who was dumping the cars, and it was his responsibility to use a sledgehammer judiciously here to reduce things down. But for the most part, underground, we had talked previously also about blasting, creating what size material, you know, that was, you don't want to overdo blasting, it's a waste of dynamite. You don't want to underdo it, then you got a labor problem.
You just want it just right.
It's like all mining, underground mining, it's an art. It's an art that you learn what you can do and what you can't. But they would always, it would be a rare thing to have any of the ore report to the grizzly that had more than one or two, maybe small pieces that might not go through.
Okay.
The search bin then, what you're wanting to do is to make sure you usually have a fine ore bin and a coarse ore bin. And you want to make sure that the two of them added together are the equivalent of several days of mill run. Now, the mill is running 24/7.
Right.
Once you get a mill up and running and the system balanced, you don't want to disrupt that. It takes a long time to reach that point. But the material, the rock, would go through a crushing stage, passing from the coarse ore bin to the fine ore bin. Fine meaning 3/4 inch minus.
Okay.
Very uniform material for getting a uniform feed to the mill. Very important. Independence had a picking belt, and this was unusual for the mining district, and they had one or two men at all times on the picking belt, picking out anything that wasn't ore. Now, a lot of times you get waste rock mixed in, and instead of wasting the effort milling that, why, they would take it off the picking belt. This is kind of a self-defeating kind of a thing because the men underground, knowing there was men in the picking belt, were sloppier underground, making more work for the guys on the picking belt. If they hadn't had the picking belt, it may not have been a problem to begin with. Anyway, you end up, now when you go to the Independence and you're visiting there, notice that to the south side of the old mill building, there's a large dump. And when you look at that, there's no portal anywhere near around. And you might scratch your head and wonder now,
how did that happen?
How did that all that dump rock get there?
Okay.
That's off the picking belt. There's a huge amount of it. Okay. I mean, it's phenomenal knowing each one of those pieces was picked off a belt, put in a waste car, and sent out there and dumped. And over the years, made quite a substantial form for itself.
Right.
The ore then passing through the crushing stage would go to the fine ore bin where the dividing point between mining and milling is there because it was the miner's responsibility to keep those bins full. The ore had to come out of the underground at a rate sufficient to keep them full. From the fine ore bin on, then it became the word beneficiation, which is a fancy word meaning that you're going to try to extract from the ore all of its value.
Make that separation. Makes sense.
Yeah. The first thing that would happen then is you have a feeding belt combination, kind of a belt conveyor with a timing device on it so that you can very carefully control the amount of ore that's going into the mill itself. Milling in the past, let's go back to kind of our dividing point in history for the Willow Creek Mining District, the First World War. Before the First World War, there was either had a device called a Chilean mill or you had a stamp mill. Those were the two choices. And we've mentioned before, the stamp mill is a scale-up, commercial scale-up of a mortar and pestle. We had mentioned previous that a large milling operation like you had in Juneau during the time from the 1880s on Douglas Island, you had the big Treadwell mine. And at one time, they had 1,000 stamps running. And these were stamps that weighed about 1,000 pounds each. And those stamps were capable of crushing and grinding 3 tons a day, a rough number. So this then you say, whoa, wait a minute, that's 3,000 tons per day on Douglas Island in the 1880s. Well, it was a little later than that. It was the 90s, 1900. But it was the largest mining operation, I don't want to say in the world, but certainly in North America at the time. And then that was eclipsed by the AJ mine, which opened across the channel, the Gastineau Channel, in Juneau proper. And that produced even a larger tonnage per day from underground. The AJ was an interesting artifact of history because for many years, AJ Industries was one of the Dow 30 industrials.
Oh, okay.
Very important thing. Anyway, I'm so easily distracted here. Back to the mill. Early days, we've scaled up a mortar and pestle, and we've got a stamp mill. When the Spanish first got interested in all the mining opportunities in Mexico, and for that matter, in South America and Central America, one of their first test methods for a property was called an arasta. And it was a selected flat rock with a hole drilled in it, a post, and an arm on the post, and a beast of burden walking in endless circles, dragging a huge rock behind it around the flat rock.
Okay.
And here the people who are doing the mining then are bringing ore from whatever source and throwing it underneath the boulder that's being pulled around, and it's getting reduced by this ox or whatever animal.
Mm-hmm.
When they'd finally get it ground sufficiently, they'd flush all of the ground material off the flat rock and do a recovery.